If there are any issues, I made Rebbe a co-host, so you'll be able to do anything
okay,
that needs
great.
to be done
okay.
if I'm not on this on the shiur the entire time.
Okay, so we usually give the same introduction when we talk about these halachas of childcare and Shabbos, as I'm going to try really, really hard to try to condense 90% of Hilchos Shabbos into less than an hour or so, because the issues of childcare touch on multiple halachas. We're going to span from Tochin to Lisha to Bishul to Bapapatish to Bona to a few others in between. And again, obviously, we can't do justice to all of the above. We'll try to see if we can get at least some Rashi Parachim. As Rabbi earlier pointed out, these are very, very common shilas, very, very much relevant to my. So let's begin with an issue that relates to children on Shabbos. That's the issue of eating. We all know that if you're a hungry baby means a screaming baby, means a cranky baby. So we want to make sure that the children are eating properly. So what are some of the issues that come up in terms of preparing food for children on Shabbos? So many of these we're going to talk about touch on issues relating to adults as well. But again, we're going to try to keep the focus on children. So one common shaila that comes up is when we feed our children is that we probably, for health safety reasons, we don't want to give them two big pieces of food. And the question becomes, what issues are involved when we start to cut up fruits and vegetables and pieces of chicken, etc.? What are some of the halachas that govern preparation of food in that manner on Shabbos? So the potential halach involved is the halach of tochein. The Gemara says Masechta Shabbos. And if you take a large item and break it up, cut it up into little pieces, so that would be a potential Torah violation of tochein, of grinding. Although there is a machlekes rishonim whether this actually applies to food. There's a famous shittas Rosh that says that maybe this tarsugi doesn't exist, that ain't tochein be'ochlin, but in Shulchan Aruch we don't paskin. That way in Shulchan Aruch we paskin, that there could be a problem of tochein even on foods that are edible beforehand. Just the mere fact that I'm making them into smaller pieces would be a problem. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, you cut a vegetable or fruit into very, very small pieces, that would be a potential malacha d'oraisa. How do we navigate that in terms of a children? So one issue is what the Shulchan Aruch quotes, the lashon of dakda, that obviously if you take an apple and you cut it into half, that's not toichin. You take a carrot, you know, cut it into half, that's not toichin. Question is, at what point does it reach the potential issue of toichin? So toichin means like grinding, like into little tiny pieces. So it has to be very, very small pieces. How small was small? So we shouldn't feel bad that we don't know the answer to that question. The Sefer Yireyim, Lezmi Mitzvah, Tamar Rebbein Adam, throws his hands up and says, we don't know the answer to that question. So Einan Bikiyim, we're not sure what's considered to be a dak for these purposes. So that's one thing to keep on the back burner. And we're not quite sure just how small was small. Then there are some Yishayim who maintain that just as we find vis-a-vis other Malachas, say for example, Boirer, that when you do borer, samachus ud, if you do it right before the meal, so under certain circumstances, that's not considered to be a malacha. Why is that? So there's a principle that Rishonim coined, it's called derech achila and conscious and derech malacha, that there are certain activities that are done, if they're done so much in the context of eating, so they lose their status of malacha. Now again, that's a very, very tricky thing. Obviously, certain malachas that doesn't apply to, let's say, for example, you can't cook right before you eat. There's no kul nuchas bishul called derech achila. But certain malachas, which are kind of a borderline, lend themselves to this idea of derech achila and conscious of derech malacha. Therefore, the Rashba says, just as by boirer, under certain circumstances, if certain other conditions are met as well, we can label something as being derech achila, not derech malacha. The same would be true when it comes to tochein. So if a person cuts up fruits and vegetables into small pieces right before the meal, when I say right before the meal, the same way right before the meal when it comes to a boirer is probably defined as right before the meal. It's not an hour and a half before, and not before you come home from shul. It means Ramesh describes it as being basically the last activities that you do right before you're ready to sit down and eat the meal. That's called sabachos uda. So the Rashba says that kula would apply to tochen as well. Therefore, it would be permissible to cut up a fruit or vegetable right before you're about to serve it. So even though the Ramah does quote this Rashba halacha, there are other Mishnah who disagree with it, and the Mishnah Berurah comes up with a little bit of a compromise. Mishnah Berurah says that what one should do is as follows. One should only rely on this Rashba, this Ramah, but see from the pieces that are not really, really tiny. Since we said before, it's hard to know what's called big pieces, what's called small pieces. The Mishnah Berurah says if they seem to you to be not too dakda, they don't seem to be too small. On the other hand, we would be nervous just to do it just like that. So So if you do it into quasi larger pieces and it's a samach lasuda, but see if those two things the Mishnah Berurah says would be acceptable. So now, if you go down the line of Mishnah Berurah, you would have a good parameters to deal with in terms of preparing food for children. So if you want to, let's say, break a little fruit into smaller pieces, so you try not to make it mamish small. It should be safe enough, small enough, but safe enough. It doesn't have to be tiny small. If it's a little bit, to the point where it's probably not docked back anyway, and it's being done right before the meal, so but see if those two things, one would have a right to be mekel. The Rosh Hashulchan is even more mekel. The Rosh Hashulchan is mekel outright, like the Rashba, like the Ramah, that as long as it's done before the meal, everything is good. Again, YHVH, so there are some who will just follow straight the Rosh Hashulchan Ramah, Rashba path, that as long as you're cutting it for the baby right before the meal, everything is fine. And those who want to be chayshid for the Shmura would at least try to make the pieces slightly bigger. This shaila comes up not just in terms of cutting up fruits and vegetables, but one of the most common applications is in terms of mashing, particularly, let's say, mashing a banana. So you want to feed a banana to a child, say so you want to mash it up, was that subject to the rules of Teichin and not? So that was a big machlekes apoyske, machlekes in the Chazanish and Ramayshe. So the Chazanish's opinion was that mashing is the equivalent of cutting into little pieces, and therefore would be subject to the problem of Teichin. But then the Chazanish came with a very, very big chumrah. Chazanish says that mashing is not just tochein, mashing is the ultimate tochein. But man, the Mamurim, we say that samach lasud is okay. That's when you're dealing with something which is not objectively tochein. Like cutting a vegetable, cutting a fruit is not outright tochein. It could be tochein deraisa, but it's not like objectively tochein. And therefore, it lends itself to samach lasud, to be keveya, and it's called derech achila. When you're dealing with something which is mamish, objectively teichin, such as mashing, it's so super duper teichin, says the Chazanish, that it doesn't even lend itself to the kulu of derech achila. And even if you mash the banana right before you feed it to the child, that would be an issa d'oraisa. And then to make matters worse, the Chazanish says he doesn't even think we follow the Rashba anyway, even though the Ramah quotes it. He doesn't think that all the other Rishonim, for sure, the Rishonim don't agree to it. He doesn't think we should be makel on it. And therefore, the Chazanish was the biggest anti-mashing bananas in Aloha. He said that we don't really follow the Rashba, and even if we did follow the Rashba, the Rashba's kula wouldn't work here. Then the Chazanish turns around with a tremendous kula. He just asks the mashing banana, then he turns the world upside down. He says, but if you want to mash a banana, then it's butul gamri. Then you can mash the banana with the back of a fork or something, or back of a knife or a spoon, do it in some shulik way. So then the Chazanish says, then it would be more to even the chila to mash bananas. So Rabbi Shafayz writes in a tshuva that he doesn't understand the Chazanish with chila ve'atzoyt. He doesn't understand the chumrah of the Chazanish, and he doesn't understand the kulah of the Chazanish. So the chumrah of the Chazanish he doesn't understand because he doesn't think that mashing is bechlal, considered to be teichin. Teichin means when you take a piece and you break it into little pieces, like grain. You grind it up, and now it's a lot of little pieces of flour. So by a mashed banana, it's not multiple pieces. It's one big piece. It's just mushed together. So very... the answer is yes. Avocado is similar to banana when it comes to mashing. Yes, says Rav Moshe, he thinks that mashing bananas or mashing avocados is bechal not in the parish of teichin. It's learned to a teichin. He says the imtum to learn that the Chazanish is right that it's called teichin. He doesn't know why doing a keliachayad would help. Keliachayad takes things from being deraisas into being derabbanans, but it generally doesn't make things mutlach et chila. So says the Rabbi, I don't understand why the Chazanish asked it. I don't understand why the Chazanish was matter it. So says Rabbi, what should we do? So says Rabbi, we should be like the Chazanish, even though we don't understand either one of what the Chazanish said. That we shouldn't be make a lot right against the Chazanish. On the other hand, we don't have to be more machmir than him. So Zachum Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi says you should try not to mash bananas or avocados or other kinds of things. But if you want to do it, again, even though Moshe said he doesn't understand the chumah, doesn't understand the kula, but the mice will end up at the same place the Chazanish. So that's what I think the latest farm right, either like the Chazanish Mikra Din or like Ramesh's deference to the Chazanish, is that all these kinds of mashings and stuff to be done for children or for adults should all be done kiliachayah. That's the best way of doing it. So the mice, if you want to mash a banana, so try to do it in an abnormal fashion. This idea of teichin on food, so the place can point out that this only applies to things that grow on the ground, to gedulei karka. It doesn't apply, let's say, to chicken or to eggs or things like that. Even though there's a lot of lomdus and other malachas where the chicken is considered to be like gedulei karka, there's a big machlekes in Rishonim in general, whatever you need with gedulei karka, whether animals that get their nutrition from the karka, let's say the chicken that eats corn that grows in the ground, is that a lachli kol gidul karka or not? So there are different opinions about that for the malach of toichen. So the post were pretty mekel that one can eat gradin, cut a little piece of chicken into little pieces, and that wouldn't pose a problem of toichen per se. One shouldn't use what's called the klei miyuchad lekach. Should use like a grinder. That's a different problem. That's a little bit of the chaldeic problem. But in terms of malachas toichen, so as long as it's not gidul karka, that would technically be okay. So you can use a fork or something like that. Again, so the first malacha that we have to clear ourselves is the malacha of toichen. So your question before about eggs and mayo, we're going to save that for the next malacha that comes up. So there's another malacha that comes up in terms of preparation of food for children. And that's the potential malacha of lisha. So losh is kneading. So kneading is not just if you take flour and mix it with water, make a dough, but anytime you take little solid pieces and mix it together with liquidy kind of pieces, and you liquidy kind of a mixture, and you mix it all together, mush it all together, so you're running into a potential problem of lisha. So one of the most common shilas of lisha revolves around baby food, making baby food, mixing oatmeal, making the baby oatmeal on Shabbos, mixing the powder together with the water. Does that run into a potential issue of lisha? So in order to understand the chumras and the kulos of lisha, we have to just familiarize ourselves for a moment with the machlekes of Tanoim about what exactly the moment of truth of lisha is. When exactly is lisha generally violated? So there's a big machlekes of Tanoim where the lisha is violated at the time what's called nesidas hamayim, at the time when the water and the solid come into contact. Was lisha violated at the later point, the stage of gibol, when it's actually literally mixed and you exert some pressure and you mix it all together? So it's a machlekes atanoim, and it's a question in the Gemara how we paskin it. Machlekes rishonim, it's unresolved question in Shulchan Aruch. How do we paskin the halacha? Is lisha considered to be at the moment of the water and the salat touch? Was lisha considered to be the moment when the actual gibol takes place? By nafkamina. So the big nafkamina is going to be. And that the Gemara seems to present the possibility of a shinoi mitigating lisha issues. We mentioned before that it's not clear whenever you do things kaliyach hayad. So most of the time that doesn't translate to being mutter. Every once in a while, doing things kaliyach hayad can actually translate to being mutter lechatchila. So this is a strange din here that sometimes lisha is going to actually be mutter if it's done properly kaliyach hayad. The only thing is the post can point out that the kaliyach hayad has to be done exactly right. The kaliyach hayad has to be done at the moment of truth. So whenever the moment of a violation of leash is going to be, that's when the kiliach hayad has to be performed. So now it's a little bit unclear because since we have two possible moments, we have machlekes tanoim, machlekes rishonim, unresolved question Shulchan Aruch, when the moment of leash is. So now every time we have solids touching liquids, we have to know when we're going to apply the shinoi. So that's why the poskim say you have to what we call a double shinoi. You have to do a shini at both points. You have to do a shini at the time of Nesidas Hamayim, and you have to repeat another shini at the time of Gibel. So let's say, practically speaking, you want to make baby food, you want to make baby cereal on Shabbos, so you want to mix together the powder with the water, you have to be careful to do a shini at the time of Nesidas Hamayim, then you have to do another shini at the time of the Gibel. So the Nesidas Hamayim, how would you do that? How would you even go, what kind of shini would you do at the time of Nesidas Hamayim? So the Gemara talks about the possibility of doing things in an abnormal fashion in terms of what comes first. So some mixtures, the powder comes first, then the liquid goes in second, and others it's vice versa. So the post can say, whatever the minute is, whatever the olam does 6 days a week, Shabbos, you gotta do it differently. So I haven't made baby cereal in a long time. So whatever it says in the box, whatever the normal way of doing the baby cereal, whatever you do 6 days a week, it's always do it the other way around. I imagine that that it's more normal to do the powder first. Am I correct? Anyone who experienced this? So it's normal you put the powder first. So here on Shabbos, you put the water in, your water in first. But that's only going to help in terms of the shinui b'shas nesidas hamayim. What about the shinui b'shas gibol, the second shinui that's necessary? So here the Gemara also talks about a shinui b'shas gibol. That would have to be done in multiple ways. So the Gemara talks about doing it shasi ve'erev, doing like crisscross motions instead of mixing it very, very well. Or the Gemara talks about shaking it or using your fingers. So you better check with your you better check with your wives as to whether she's going to prove the finger or motion or the other motions. So any one of those kinds of shinui would potentially be acceptable. So this is a little bit tricky because we're not so sure exactly how to do all the shinuyim properly. And to make matters even worse, there are many places can maintain that all these shinuyim only apply when we're dealing with what's called the blila racha. The Gemara at the end of Shabbos talks about blilas avos and blila rachas. Blila rachas are very thin, battery kind of mixtures. Blila avos are a thicker, pasty, doughy kind of a mixture. And generally, blila avos is a potential deraisa of lisha. Blila racha is only an issur derabanan of lisha. So there are many people who maintain that all these kulas only apply when you're dealing with the derabanan anyway. When you're dealing with the deraisa, we're not even sure that any of these kulas work. So it's for this reason that it's not the greatest thing to make these oatmeal cereals on Shabbos. Because there are a lot of things you have to keep in mind. First of all, the chachilis should try to make it pretty thin, which doesn't always go so well. Then you have to try to make a shinui bishas to sinis amayim. Then you have to make a shinui again bishas gibo. You know, so with all those things put together, it doesn't always come out so great. So bishas hachagodol, the person really, really has to make oatmeal on Shabbos. So the chachilis should try to make it with a little avos, and they're really, really stuck. So then they're supposed to make a little, the chachilis should try to do a little rachos, with a battery kind of consistency. And if they're really, really stuck, they can even make mila ava, but again, they have to try to be machmir on both of the shinuyim. So if you want my personal recommendation, you know, unless you're really, really stuck, it's better to try to avoid making these kinds of mixtures. Yeah, some other question, yeah.
Rav, is there any shaykhus to instant coffee? To this, so yeah, I know it's coffee. It's like, I know it's maybe not official if it's freeze-dried, but maybe it's similar to powder, if it's, you know, you need to activate the freeze-dried coffee beans and with water in order for it to become coffee. I don't know if there's any shaykhus to that.
So the general issue when you're dealing with drinks, something that ends up being a liquid, let's say you want to stump to make, you want to put instant coffee into water. So that then it's a bishul shayla, another story, but that's not a lisha shayla, because at least it has to end up being either a mamisha salad, like a thick salad, or at least a thinner kind of a salad. If it just ends up being water with some powder in it, some coloring in it, so that's nothing. That's what the Paiskim write. Like, say you want to mix chocolate cocoa powder with milk. So that's not a problem of lisha, unless it's a kind of a cocoa powder that doesn't dissolve properly. Like some of the cheaper brands ends up with these big clumps of chocolate on the bottom. So the Paiskim are concerned possibly with that. But if it's something that distributes nicely, spreads out, thins out nicely, so that it's only a liquid with some powder, that's not going to be really short again.
Thank you.
So there are other issues involved in terms of preparing baby foods on Shabbos. There are potential issues. One of the issues that comes up is in terms of milk. We'll talk a little bit more in a moment about the nursing issues on Shabbos. That's a loaded question, but we'll stick just to Bishul for a second. If a person wants to has milk or formula and they want to heat it up on Shabbos, so then the rules follow the regular rules of Bishul. So the basic rule of Bishul is if something was already cooked from beforehand, I'm not talking about saying mother's milk right now, but it was already cooked, like the formulas, the powders were already cooked, and now it's a question of reheating. So the general rule is Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. Nevertheless, the Rama writes that Ein Bishul Acha Bishul doesn't apply when it's a double lach and it's down the gamre. When you have something that's a liquid that's totally cooled down, you want to reheat it, so that could potentially be a problem. Mr. Brewer quotes from the earlier Acharonim that idea that double lach and down the gamre is a problem, so that's a chumrah, and therefore we're not mechuyev to combine that chumrah together with the chumrah of klisheni. It's a whole, again, this is beyond the scope right now, but nuchus bishul, there's a big question about whether klisheni affects bishul altogether. The Gemara says that mikra din, there's no bishul and klisheni altogether. Everything's mutter to klisheni. But we have a custom not to cook in klisheni for a variety of reasons. Some Rishonim say it's in the Seder Rabbanon because it looks like bishul. The Sefer Reim holds that it's a shav deraisa because maybe it's kaliya bishul, things that are very, very easily cooked in klisheni can become cooked in klisheni. So we have a minhag generally not to cook things in klisheni. So that minhag, that chumrah, only applies to things that are mamish raw, things that were already cooked at one time, so would be permitted to cook in a klisheni. So if you have, let's say, powder from milk that you want to reheat up, you want to heat up a bottle or something. So that was assuming that it was already cooked at one point. So then that would be permissible in the klisheni. If it's something that was never cooked, let's say it's mother's milk, nursing milk that you want to heat up, so it was never cooked. So then that really shouldn't be done in the klisheni. That could be done according to some folks that we done in klisheni. Most of the time, it's not so relevant anyway because mice, we're not heating up this milk to get it to be out. So let us know. No one wants it to get so hot. We just try to take a little bit of a tinge, a little bit of the cold out of it. So most of the time, we're not running into any real concern of bishul anyway. But again, that's something just to keep in mind, that if it's something that wasn't yet cooked, then one should just be aware that be careful not to get it to be too hot, or if it's going to be too hot, definitely not in a klirisha, not in a klisheni either. But the bigger issue that comes up in terms of preparation of milk is the preparation of nursing per se. Now, nursing itself obviously is permissible on Shabbos, but very often you have a situation where the woman cannot nurse. She cannot nurse either because sometimes the baby's in the hospital, sometimes the mother's in the hospital, sometimes the mother has an infection, sometimes the baby's not nursing properly. So the mother wants to pump. And pumping milk on Shabbos becomes a very, very loaded question in halacha. In general, extracting milk on Shabbos, either in terms of animals, in terms of milking a cow, or in terms of a woman extracting milk to feed the baby, is a potentially serious shaila, according to many Rishonim, probably most of Rishonim, Teshava D'Oraisa. Gemara says, Acholiv is Chayav. Not all Rishonim say we paskel like that statement of the Gemara, but Rubin Rishonim say we do. It's not 100% clear which malach it falls under. Many Rishonim say it falls under the malach of Dosh. It's like threshing. Same way that you're not allowed to apply pressure to separate the grain from the external parts of the grain. But you're not allowed to squeeze a fruit, squeeze grape on Shabbos to exert pressure to get the juice out of the fruit. So too, anytime you squeeze or you apply pressure or something to get the milk out of the cow or out of the mother, so that could be a potential Shabbos deraisa of Disha. So extract the milk in order to feed the baby the milk. So that's a Shabbos deraisa. The only way to do that would be if there's chashash of pikuach nefesh. It depends on the case. So there are some babies that won't take any formula and they don't have enough milk. The mother doesn't have milk stored up and frozen. So the baby mamish needs to nurse. What are you going to do? Pikuach nefesh. Well, what can you do? But if there's no pikuach nefesh, there's no issue of sakana whatsoever, then one would not be permitted to extract the milk in order to feed the baby. However, the problem is that for the baby, for example, the mother herself is going to be in a lot of pain. If she doesn't extract the milk, she's going to get infection. She's going to be in a lot of pain. So what do you do? So we should have already described a principle called Chalev Le'ibud. We have Chalev Le'ibud. You have a similar principle when it comes to cows, and you have a similar principle when it comes to women. Not comparing the two, but the same basic halachic principle is the same. That Chalev Le'ibud means that you pump out the milk. You pump out the milk to garbage. You just take, discard the milk right away. Some folks can be chazan nishal. You have to discard it mamish right away. It's literally, it has to come out of the mother right into a vessel, and the vessel already has some garbage in it, has some detergent in it or something. Or it's got to go not even into a vessel. It's got to go directly down the drain of the sink. Other posts can be a little bit more makel, that you can collect it in the pump and then take it and pour down the sink a minute later. That's also called cholov ibud. So that's a shayla, and then the later poskim, how exactly you define the parameters of cholov ibud. But everybody agrees that the only way to extract milk in a way that's not pikuach nefesh for the baby would be to do it in such a way that's cholov ibud. There are other issues that sometimes come up in terms of the pumps. Sometimes some women will have the hand pumps. Those are obviously less. That's not going to solve the cholov problem. That'll obviously solve the electricity problem. If you have a machine pump, she doesn't have a hand pump, so she's got to figure out how to do it in terms of electricity. That becomes even more complicated. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, about when you have cholov on Shabbos. We have someone who's a lot of tzar, like a woman's not going to extract, she's going to be a tremendous tzar, which could put her into a situation like a chola. So when all else fails, there's no goy around, so then you could do an ayadei kamayachayad. So we would permit her to actually maneuver the pump using an elbow, something like that. But again, these are things someone should try to plan in advance to try to figure out if you have to do these chol ibuds on Shabbos. Okay, so again, we obviously didn't touch about it. All issues that come up in terms of food for babies, but we try to get a little bit of a rashi prakim in terms of some of the more common shailas, the issues of tochen, the issues of lisha, the issues of bishul, issues that relate to disha in terms of nursing. So now that we have our baby eight, Baruch Hashem, we have to want to keep the baby happy. So we have a whole array of shailas that come up in terms of cleaning the baby. So the baby gets dirty. So what do you do? So how do you clean a baby properly in Shabbos? So there are a few different issues that have to be raised. One is the issue of the actual cleaning itself. One is the issue of the preparation of diapers and opening and closing of diapers in Shabbos. In terms of the cleaning of the baby itself, so the main issue is what your stand is on in terms of wipes, whether wipes are a problem in Shabbos. Why should wipes be a problem? Because they're a problem of schita, they're a problem of, not schita's parents, but a different kind of schita. the stuff that's absorbed inside the wipes, and when you press it against the baby, so it gets comes out. So that's a potential problem in terms of schita. So there's a big machlokes in the contemporary poskim already whether this is really a problem or not. It seems to boil down to almost a metzias question about how much we really view the stuff, the aloe vera, the other stuff that's inside the wipes. How much is it is really internally inside the wipes? How much has it really been absorbed into the wipes to start with? And how much is it external? If it's just kind of sitting on the outside of the wipes, then there's a significantly less of a problem. If it's really absorbed into the wipe, that would be closer to the model of squeezing out an article of clothing. There are different opinions that the Gedolei HaPoskim about that. It's very hard for me to be Mechriya this Shaila. I can say with a straight face that in the Sobolewski home, wipes have been used over the years. I didn't say which members of the family use the wipes. I said wipes have been used. There are Gedolei HaPoskim who definitely permit the use of wipes, and there are others who question them. Those who don't want to use wipes, so there are other options available, which the experts, namely my wife, have told me don't work so well. One is the spritzes, the sprays or something. You use a spray with a tissue or something, or if you do it the old-fashioned way, just with your hand and some water. But again, I'm not gonna be more machmer than I am in my own home. So again, there are Gedolei HaPoskim who do permit the regular use of the wipes, again, even though others disagree. Rabbi. There is another famous shah that comes up with diapering babies, the issue of the diapers themselves. Yeah.
Is there a big advantage to using the Shabbos wipes over regular wipes? Or within the Reb Sobolewski home, there was no differentiation?
I don't think we have what with the Shabbos wipes. There is probably a newer invention.
Okay, yeah, there's wipes they say like are kosher for Shabbos that they avoid some kind of problem with sweat. I'm not sure exactly how they work though.
I'm not sure they do anything different than the regular wipes. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. Truth, I don't know. They didn't exist in my days. My kids were little. The issue, another major issue in terms of diapers, of course, is the opening and the closing of diapers itself. So I'm going to discuss now some of the more old-fashioned, I don't mean old-fashioned, like the safety pin diapers, those are before at Kufa. I'm talking about the diapers that use the adhesive tabs on them. To the best of my knowledge, Pampers still uses them. Anyone know that for a fact? To the best of my knowledge, I think Pampers still uses the adhesive tabs, and many of the other companies use Velcro. Velcro is significantly less of any of these kinds of problems. So, but I'm still going to talk about some of the old ones because all the things that we talk about in terms of the old diapers are going to be the same thing for Band-Aids because the kids get hurt also. So you're going to have to open up and close Band-Aids also. So it's all the same basic Shiloh. So there is a fundamental question. How much is there an issue of the malachas of Kareya and Toifer on opening and closing adhesive strips, both in terms of diapers, the old Pampers, and in terms of a Band-Aid. So the Rambam writes that Medabek Niyaros is Chai Mishum Toifer, Mafri Ben Niyaros is Chai Mishum Kereya. So even though there's no stitching, there's no thread and needles, just the mere connecting of the pieces of paper through Devek is considered to be a problem. If one takes the approach that the Rambam is only describing Dibuk Niyaros that is very, very tight and stuck together, that you have to mamish work and yank apart, if you go down that route, so then you're not worried at all about any of the diapers, any of the Band-Aids, because it just simply comes off so easily. That's not called the Diaros, so then there's not much to talk about. But if you go down the route of other poskim who aren't so sure that's true, and were worried that maybe there is an issue of the Bedabic Diaros even on the adhesive strips, what coolers are available? So the possible cooler would be that it's initial kayama, that it's not for a very long amount of time. So that's a big, big machlekes poskim, whether the kul of Enesha Chayama applies to the Malach of Taifer and to Kareya altogether. The general principle of Chayama we find when it comes to Kosher, when you tie a knot, that's not for very long, so that's usually not going to be a problem. There is sometimes it will be Mut'i even the Rabbanon. But when you're dealing with Tfir, it's not clear in the Gemara that there is such a kul. That's a big machlekes Rishayim. And there are more quotes to opinions about it. There are more rights that one really shouldn't publicize this kula. Rabbah sounds like Mikra that he holds that there is a kula of Enesha Chayama by Taifin Kareya, but he says not to tell people about it. So some folks can write that the Rabbah didn't want to tell people about it by needles and thread, because that's going to lead to a terrible mikshel. You start sewing buttons on and temporarily on Shabbos, that's a terrible mikshel. But when it comes to these diapers, I'm with her anyway, according to some, and it doesn't look so bad like Taifer, so then maybe the Ramah would say you could follow the Ikra Din, and Enesha Chayama would be okay. So many posts can go down that route, that the Ikra Din, as long as it's Enesha Chayama, would be all right. The question is it really Enesha Chayama? So you have to go step by step of the diaper or a baby. Let's say I open up take the diaper out from the baby, take the pamper out, and I want to open up the tab. Why is that called Enesha Chayama? It's been stuck together for the last 10 years since it was made in the factory 10 years ago. So why is that called Kareya on a Davar Shenu Shochar Yama? So some folks can say that since when it was made in the factory, it was made to be open at a moment's notice. I mean, when they made it back in Pamper Factory years ago, they had no idea when I'm going to buy these Pampers. So they made it to be open as soon as the customer wants to open it. So that's considered to be an Shochar Yama, according to some. Okay, so it's all Zion. You make it like that. For those who want to be Mako, when they open up the Pamper, so that's been Kareya, something that was in a Shochar Yama. Then when they put it on the baby, so it's by the end of Shochar Yama, the baby's going to get dirty soon. And when the baby gets dirty a few hours later, it's by the end of Shochar Yama. And then you take it off. But then many people like to do it, especially if the baby was really dirty, they like to re-tie together, re-adhesive they'll stick the tabs back on again so the dirty head diaper doesn't get all over the place. So, and then they'll take it, throw it to the baby, throw it to the garbage. Some poskim said a red flag in that. Some poskim said that's called Shochar Yama because that last adhesive, that last connection is going to last the Yom Kippur. No one's ever going to take that apart. So maybe, even though we could have been makil on every single step along the way, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should just roll the diaper into a bag and just throw it into the garbage. So there were some poskim who responded back and said, no, that's also called Eina Shochar Yama. Why? Because I don't care how long it's going to be stuck together. My goal is simply to keep that diaper together until I get into the bag, into the garbage. Once it's in the garbage, it wants to open up in the garbage, gig isn't, hey, that doesn't interest me. So therefore, you could argue that that's not considered to be a Shochar Yama. There was a, believe it or not, Raya from the Maral Diskin to that Svar. Maral Diskin was back in the 1800s. He was not talking about Pampers, but he brought a fascinating Raya that whenever I do something that's going to last forever, but I don't care that it lasts forever, that's not called Shochar Yama. He brought a Raya from the Sar La'Azazel. The Mishnah says in Yuman that they tied the red ribbon on the horns of the Sar La'Azazel, and then they threw it down the cliff. So ask the Maral Diskin, the Avedis Asar is Deicha Yom Kippur, but not the tying, it's just a minute, just a Satakona, whatever it was, to tie the red string, not to do that Minat Torah. So what right do you have to be? Violate the Malach of Kesher? You're tying a knot that's going to last the Olam Vod? So says the Maral Diskin, yeah, it's going to last the Olam Vod, but as soon as it goes down the cliff, you don't care about it anymore. So you only care about it for the next 10 minutes. So that's called the Akshirish Eino Shochar Yama. And others wanted to say no, that when you throw a goat down the cliff, so the whole, the goat's head hits against the cliff and then the whole thing's going to unravel and the tie's going to untie. So you want to go check it, you want to go experiment, throw a goat off a cliff and see what happens, whether it preferably don't declare it to be the Sola Azazel. That's probably not such a good idea. But that's how I get it. It's hard to know. It's a good riot, not a good riot. So there are some folks who make us on a mach with that. So the bottom line is those who want to just take this attitude across the board and all these adhesives, bailing up the diapers, bailing up the band-aids, everything is in a Shochar Yama, everything is Shalom Yisrael, everything is good to go and shine, everything is in a Shochar Yama. So those poskim, those who want to follow those poskim have a right to do so. Those who want to be more machmer in this, so they'll get they'll buy the Velcro diapers instead of the adhesive diapers. In my day, I don't think they had the Velcro diapers. I remember that when my first child was born, so I told my wife, okay, we'll be making on the diapers, but we don't have to be making on the first Kriya, because the first Kriya, that's also called Eino Shochar Yama, because it was made in the factory to be open, not everyone agreed to that. So I said, maybe a good idea, maybe at least some post-conversation, open up the diaper from before Shabbos. You have to retie it, you have to restick it. If you don't restick, it's going to lose the stick to it. So I said, maybe such a bad idea. So we'll open up the diapers. We need 12 diapers, 10 diapers, 15 diapers, diapers we think we need for Shabbos. We'll open them up from before Shabbos, and we'll quickly re-tam them, and then, there's a little bit more grounds to be made up. So we were doing that for a while until my second child was born, and my first one was still in diapers, and then there was a three-day Yom Tov period in Chodesh Tishrei. So if you do the math, so we're opening up for two children, 3 days worth of diapers. So you're talking about, it was like about 90 diapers every Yom Tov. There were 270 diapers opened up in the month of Tishrei. And you know, were also throwing them at that point. I think that chumrah got it fell down with the Sola Zozo. We didn't have that chumrah anymore in the house. So again, those who want to be making, open the diapers from before Matai. Those who don't want to be Matai for you also, and just get yourself the non-pampers and hope you don't have to deal with band-aids. Hope the kids don't get hurt. And if they do, you have to rely on the Mekiyim to open up the band-aids. Since we mentioned band-aids, we talked about the kids getting hurt. We don't want to give any kid a night hurt. We hope nobody gets hurt. But since it does happen every once in a while that children do get hurt, so we'll mention quickly the issues that are relevant to this. So these are general related to chaylim, related to Goch Nevesh issues. when there's any question whatsoever, pikuach nefesh, obviously you have to get the, as soon as possible, you have to get the right medical care. A common shah that happens is a question of stitches. So the stitches fall into the category of pikuach nefesh or not? So the poskim say that infections do. Obviously the doctor tells infections, potential infections could chalila be an issue of pikuach nefesh. So anytime there's any question about whether something has to be stitched, you have to go to a doctor and assess. And the doctor will tell you whether he thinks it has to be stitched up or not. And if it has to be, if it needs stitches, the chash of cleaning up properly and getting it taken care of and stitched up properly, that could be an issue of pikuach nefesh. When you're dealing with pikuach nefesh issues, so again, the issue are not really pikuach nefesh proper issues, but just important to know that yesh v'yesh in terms of pikuach nefesh and Shabbos. There are some pikuach nefesh issues that every second counts. Chalil, a person's in cardiac arrest, so it's not time to start looking for a goy to do things for the hayat. But if it's a question of getting stitches and the bleeding is controlled, and now it's just a question of infection, and you got to get to the hospital at some point in the next few hours, so then you have time. So then you have time to find a goy, to get an Uber, whatever other ways to get to the hospital in a less outright than a Shabbos activity. Whenever you get the stitches done, so then there is a discussion in the post came about whether you're allowed to get all the stitches done. Let's say if it's a Goyish doctor, not even a Shiloh, but even if it's a Jewish doctor or from doctor, so the post can discuss, let's say the doctor says medically we really only need X amount of stitches, but the normal protocol would be more than that, because medically or other reasons, whatever, we want to make sure the stitching is done 100% right. So can you do the extra stitching or not? So Shlomo Zalman was making on this. A variety of different reasons why. A complicated lumbus as to why he was making, but the mice of Shlomo Zalman was making, and again, Shlomo Zalman, at the expense of the kids stitching properly. So usually a doctor's not going to ask you this anyway. If you end up in the emergency room getting a kid stitched up, they're going to stitch it up normally, and just not the time to start raising chumras about Ruba Shurin and things like that. So whatever the doctor's going to do, just the mice will let him do it. Okay. Back to happier things in terms of babies. So in terms of other things related to babies and childcare. Oh, one other thing in terms of diapers, I forgot to mention that very often the baby has a diaper rash, or you want to prevent a diaper rash. The question is putting on the diaper creams. So putting on creams on Shabbos is a potential problem of memareach, of making like a smooth surface. So we try to avoid those kinds of things on Shabbos. It's not 100% clear that all of these things are really going to be a real Isser Memareach. But again, in the normal circumstances, we wouldn't put on these creams. Nevertheless, a little baby is considered to be a Cholo She'ein by Sakona. There's a Darg in Halacha, not quite a Cholo She'esh, but it's called a Cholo She'ein by Sakona, where we're not allowed to do Deraisis for, but we are allowed to do a Mir Liakim for, and we're allowed to do things Kaliach Yad for. There are different opinions as to exactly the parameters of that statement, but Meik Mikra then we paskin that if you have a Echelish Ein Beisakona, so then you're allowed to do things Kaliachayat. So Lamais, if you have a baby that's irritated and you have to put on one of the diaper creams, so then you should try to do it in a little bit of an abnormal fashion. So either you could just plop it on, just plop it on and put the diaper over it, and then the diaper will smear it on. Or if you really, really have to shmir it, say shmir it at the back. You have to hand it something, if someone shouldn't take away to do it. If you happen to have a non-Jewish babysitter in the house who's diapering the kids, not to, so that can stop all of the above. Okay, so now Baruch Hashem, we have our happy baby. The baby ate, and the baby is clean. And now Halavai, the baby will go to sleep now, but that's not always the next thing on the agenda. So we have to try to entertain the baby a little bit. We want to take the baby out a little bit in terms of issues related to playing for both babies and a little bit older children as well. So the first issue is in terms of taking the babies outside on Shabbos, or the toddlers outside on Shabbos, is the issue of carrying. So even though in HaTorah, once a child is able to walk by themselves, we apply the rule called Chaynos Esatzmo, there would not be a malach involved in carrying them, even Rosh Hashanah. Nevertheless, Midirabonon, we don't say that. Midirabonon, you're not allowed to carry a child in an area where you're not allowed to carry yourself. So either it's Rosh Hashanah or a Carmelist, the Rabbonon, a mice, you're not allowed to carry a child, you're not allowed to push a baby carriage. Are you permitted to have a goy push a baby carriage for you? So one could theoretically make an argument that it should be mutter based on the principles of shvus to shvus b'mapa mitzvah. It's a general rule that you're allowed to ask a goy to do a derabanan for you b'mapa mitzvah. So why is this a derabanan? Derabanan for multiple reasons. If the baby is old enough to walk by themselves, then for sure it's a derabanan. Even if the baby's not old enough to walk by themselves, the area that you're walking in is most probably a Durabon anyway. We generally assume that most of our communities are probably only Durabonans. They're not real Shisrams, they're ISIS for a variety of reasons. So one could theoretically make a point that to have a goy push a baby carriage would probably not be so bad on Shabbos. Nevertheless, there are many places that have a minug that Zilzul Shabbos to prevent any kind of, public, lightning of the aura of Shabbos. Many communities have the custom that they do not permit a baby carriage to be strolled around, even on a goyim on Shabbos. But mostly it depends on your limits. So some communities have that minute, there's another minute. So in our communities, room to room, our communities have an even anyway. So it's not, the whole issue is really a moot issue. The issue comes up sometimes if you're out in the boonies somewhere, out in the middle of nowhere, for instance, you're watching a tone somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and you're staying in a hotel, and the meals are in the shul or whatever they are. There's no way to maneuver it otherwise. So the question is, can you have an answer? So and usually these kinds of communities they don't have any minute. There is no minute. There's nothing. So again, those of B'Shas HaKhan Gobel have to be made by their going. So they should ask a shadow before whether it's an appropriate thing to be make a lot. When we push a baby carriage in Shabbos, sometimes there are issues that come up in terms of the baby carriage, even let's say if there is an Erev, there's sometimes issues that come up in terms of the maneuvering of the hood of the baby carriage. Is that a Shalav and a CSO or not a CSO? There are different opinions about that. Many people say that our baby carriages, since the hood is already connected from before Shabbos, so it just folds up and down. So that was a big machlekes, is that even a problem altogether? So there are many who are making on that. Those who are machmir in that would insist that the hood has to be opened a little bit from before Shabbos, more than a tefach. There's a halacha when you're dealing with what's called an oil arah, you're dealing with a temporary kind of an ohel. So that if it was opened already at tefach from before Shabbos, was called Mosif al Ola Roy, that's sugi at the end of Masechah Shabbos. So those poskim who are machmir that the hood of a baby carriage is considered to be a potential chashash of an oil would insist that it had to be opened a little bit from beforehand. When we other issues that come up in terms of babies, in terms of keeping them occupied, or older children keep them occupied. So one of the issues is the baby swings, about putting the baby into a swing on Shabbos, so these wind-up kinds of, wind-up battery swings. So there was a big machlokes in the poskim about, in general, about wind-up things. This is relevant not just for the babies, it's relevant for the little bit older kids, wind-up toys, wind-up cars, that kind of stuff. So is that at all a problem? So there is a famous psak of the Chayodom. The Chayodom said that winding up a watch on Shabbos is a malacha deraisa, because some of you probably don't even know what wind-up watches are. So in the old days, when I was a kid, you had a wind-up watch, or else it would stop. So the Chayodim said that if the watch stopped and now you're going to wind it up, that's a machma patish. The watch wasn't functioning, and now the winding up, you're getting to start again. So that's fixing something that was broken. So there was a machlokes within this chayodom. There was machlokes at poskim. One of the watches is going already, and you want to wind it again to keep it going. That's what we used to do when we were little kids. Every morning, you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is you wind up your watch, to give it a little bit more koichas, and it would go. So there was machlokes at poskim about whether the watch is already going. Is that also called machlokatish? So someone would argue, it's not broken yet. As the phrase goes, if it ain't broken, they'll fix it. So it's not, if it's still functioning, it's still going. So the fact that I'm just giving it a little koichas, a little kick, to go longer, that's not what Machmat Tatish. Not everyone agreed to that. Remember, when I was a little boy, so my grandmother, La Sholem, was the first one who told me that psach. So she told me that she came from in Europe. The rabbi used to say that as long as the watch is still going, you're allowed to wind up a pre-existing going up watch. Only if the watch stops, you're allowed to wind it up. Okay? That was the psach that I grew up with. So the question is whether that issue of winding up things, winding up the watch, is that relevant to the wind up tours or not? Through some poskim wanted to say that the same way you're not allowed to wind up a watch in Shabbos, you're not allowed to wind up a car in Shabbos, you're not allowed to wind up a swing in Shabbos. And Rosh Hashanah Zalman wanted to be made. Why? What's the Sfar L'Chalik? Rosh Hashanah Zalman said that the wind up watches, when a watch is not going, so it's broken. It's not literally broken, but I look at my watch, I see it's got the wrong time, it stopped. So I say, oh, the watch is not functioning right now. I got to do something to get it to function again. When I walk into my house and I see that the swing is not on, I don't say, oh, Gavalt, the swing is broken. Let me go wind it up. I don't want it. If I care, if the swing would be swinging back and forth all day without the baby in it, I'd say that's broken. I don't want it to be that way. So Shlomo Zalman wanted to argue, when I have a wind-up car, but it's not in the wound up, it's not wound up, it's not broken, that's what it's supposed to do. So that's not considered to be a malacha, that's not machlokes pshat altogether. Not everyone agreed to that, but different opinions about that. So there were some who were outright makel on the wind-up swings, and others were machlokes. Remember when my first daughter was born, so somebody gave us one of these swings. I didn't want to use one of these swings because it is chashash. So I decided what I'll do is that we'll get one of the swings, one of the battery swings, different kind of swings, and I'll leave it on from before Shabbos. So the swing will constantly be on. The swing will be on the whole time. And then when I want to put the baby in, just put the baby inside. So we did that for 1 week, and then I realized that it was mashmia kol, that it makes a lot of noise. And there's an issa derabanan according to many rishonim, this way, that whenever you have a system that was set up for before Shabbos that draws attention to itself and making a lot of noise, so that's also mid derabanan, either because it's a zilzul Shabbos or marzain Shabbos, there are different reasons for that issur. So I was nervous about this this swing. I fish out about the alarm clock. Moshe's famous psach that you can't use an alarm clock on Shabbos, even if you set it from before Shabbos, because it makes so much noise that it's going to be mashmiya kol. So Moshe said the only kind of alarm clocks you can use are the ones that you can't hear in the next room. You can't hear in the next room, they're not going to wake you up. So others disagreed with that psach of Moshe. Yesh, yesh. So in the end of the day, we stopped the swings. So, again, yeah, there were those who make up the swings, and the others didn't like the swings too much. When you have a little bit older kids, so we have a lot of different toys and games that run into a whole array of Shilas and Shabbos in terms of general playing games and board games, all this kind of stuff on Shabbos. What should I take be on all of these kinds of things? So here we should differentiate between grown-ups and children. So a lot of things that we look the other way with when it comes to children, so we really shouldn't be encouraging, we should be discouraging them for our older members of Klal Yisrael. So Shabbos Kochosin, his parak about games and toys and Shabbos, so he writes that everything he's about to write is only for children. Anyone over the age of bar mitzvah, not supposed to be playing board games, etc. on Shabbos. Again, I can't say that the outright also, if they're mamish about muktzim, other malachas, things that are outright also, okay, you can't do. Other than them are just not in the proper spirit of Shabbos, not the image of Shabbos. So then, sometimes a rav has to, sometimes tailor-make the psak a little bit. Sometimes it's the mirhara. Sometimes if you don't let the family play game such and such, so then maybe worse chalila than chil Shabbos that's being done. So again, certainly these activities, if there's no real malacha, no real muktzah involved, so then as a general rule, we try to discourage our older children from doing these things. So one of these things that falls into this category that we should definitely be discouraging our over the age of bar mitzvah children is playing ball on Shabbos. Playing ball on Shabbos is a big steer to conditions of Shabbos, a big zilzul of Shabbos. And therefore, nobody over bar mitzvah should be involved in playing ball on Shabbos. If a little kid is tossing around the ball or something, I'm not talking about having a professional, little league, baseball teams playing on Shabbos, but if you have, little kids are running around, shooting basketball or throwing a football in the backyard or something, they're basically keeping out of trouble on Shabbos. They're under the age of bar mitzvah. So I don't think that's so terrible. But once they turn bar mitzvah, they should, or close to bar mitzvah, they should be kind of discouraged from those kind of activities. You have a lot of the, games, board games, abolishes relating to kosev and Shabbos. So many of these things are not really outright kosev. The old child's about Scrabble, these kinds of games, and they're not outright the Kosev Shilas, or they're making the puzzles, and generally, they're playing Legos and Bonehead, and all the above. So, most of these things are not real Shilas because they're all initial playoffs, they all fall apart. The second you touch the Lego, it falls apart. The second you touch the Scrabble board, it falls apart. All the stuff that can't really last for very long, so probably is not real Malach involved anyway. But again, so for little kids, these things are okay. If people get a little bit older, so they should be discouraged from these kinds of things. All right? Okay, so again, we obviously didn't get a chance to deal with every single shot that come up in terms of kids, but I just try to highlight some of the main issues that come up. One last, just almost all-encompassing issue in terms of children, and that's the notion of asking a child to do something for you on Shabbos. So that's a no-no. Ask a child to do malacha for you on Shabbos. So that's a very serious problem. That's a violation of Seres HaDibros. Saskum loch ato bincho bitecha. Bincho bitecha is not referring to over bar mitzvah. It's talking over bar mitzvah is ato. It's talking about under bar mitzvah. So one should not be telling a child to be doing anything for them on Shabbos. There is a machlekes aposkim about if to tell a child to do it the rabbanon if it's litzorach hakotan. If the child needs it for something, and I'm encouraging them to do it the rabbanon litzorach atzmam, so that's already a shot. That's machlekes rishonim, and then Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Kibbeh b'shasachak. Maybe we have a right to make on that. But to ask a kotan to do things for us, it's for sure out of the question. But to ask a kotan to do it the raisa, and that's mamshav violation of the seres adibur. So one has to stay away from all those kinds of things. Okay, good. All right, a lot of hatzlach and everything, and Beit Hashem will see people live and not too long in Yeshiva. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, be well. Call to everybody.
Bye bye.
Thank you.